My name's Greg. I'm a believer. I'm in recovery for alcohol and drugs. See if I can do this without my glasses. So, I was born and raised in Southern California during the 1970s. I had a good childhood. School was easy for me, and I had many friends. We were outside every day riding bikes, swimming, playing sports, or hanging out at the beach. Growing up, I always knew my parents loved each other, and I knew they loved me. I also knew something was missing from our family. I didn't realize it at the time, but the thing that was missing was a connection to God. We never went to church. I was never taught about Christ, the Bible, or faith. I was expected to follow the rules and do the right thing, but I was left to do it on my own power. The closest thing I had to a religion was sports. My favorite has always been baseball. I played through high school, and when I wasn't playing, I was watching games on TV or listening to games on the radio. I collected baseball cards and got to go to a game once in a while. My life was fairly innocent through grade school. My childhood ended when we went to middle school. I went from a school with 90 kids in sixth grade to a middle school with 500 kids in the seventh grade. I was still a 12-year-old child, but a lot of the older kids had the bodies of adults. Instead of playing dodgeball at recess, guys had moved on to smoking, fighting, talking about getting into girls' pants. Outside of school, it was a jungle where anything goes in survival of the fittest. It was common to see guys get girls drunk and take advantage of them. Loyalty was rare. You were lucky if you could find a friend who wouldn't try and get your girlfriend or your sister into bed when you weren't around. The cruelty and betrayal I saw going on around me caused me a lot of fear as a young kid. I had my first drink at 13. It was spring break, and a friend got into his parents' liquor cabinet while they were at work. I was surprised at how relaxing the feeling was and how my fears and anxiety evaporated. After a few more drinks, I ran into a girl from school, and words came easy, and we developed a connection. From then on, I drank whenever there was a party or anything social. I met my first serious girlfriend when I was 15. We met on a Friday night riding around town in the back seat of a friend's station wagon. From then on, we were a couple. She was one of the few people I trusted. We did everything together. We'd skip school, go to the beach. She went with my family on camping trips. We went to concerts together, and we partied together. After a few years, our relationship turned into a cycle of breaking up and making up. We were immature and didn't know how to handle conflict, jealousy, or when we didn't have time for each other. We always found our way back to each other, but the reunions were short-lived and the innocence was lost. When this relationship dissolved, I was left with a void that couldn't be replaced in the shallow dog-eat-dog world that surrounded me. This was one of the first times I can remember feeling alone. I went on to have other girlfriends, but nobody compared to the connection with the first. It was around this time I learned that the man I thought was my grandpa was actually my mom's stepfather. He had married my grandma when my mom was around four. I also learned that he had abused my mom throughout her childhood. I couldn't understand how my mom could live her life like nothing happened. I felt deceived and hatred towards him for what he did to my mom, and then passing himself off as a lovable grandpa to me. After this family secret came to light, I told her I didn't want to see him again, and I never did. A few years later, he got arrested for holding my grandma hostage while abusing pills, and he died a felon all alone. I was becoming disillusioned with life. The world felt like a broken system full of selfish people. I decided if this is what life is about, I wasn't going to participate. I quit caring about school and lost interest in the idea of going to college. My circle of friends shrank to a small group of people who liked to party. I got arrested several times in high school, and I didn't trust anybody. I drank and used drugs to escape the loneliness I felt. My 18th birthday fell on Easter Sunday. I had no concept of Christ. Easter Sunday meant nothing more to me than hard-boiled eggs, a Sunday ham, and chocolate, all the profane symbols of a pagan holiday. The closest thing I had to a church was the amphitheater a couple miles from my house. Bands from all over the world would come there to play concerts outdoors. It was the 80s, and the rock bands showed up there every weekend. A couple weeks after my 18th birthday, an old hippie band came to town and played three nights at the amphitheater. There was a psychedelic carnival of gypsies that followed the band into town and camped in the parking lot all weekend. We went to check out the scene, and I was blown away by the freaks in tie-dye and the fluorescent school buses. You could buy weed or mushrooms or acid right out in the open. I had never seen anything like it. These people had checked out of society a long time ago and seemed to have broken free from the rat race. The carnival of gypsies left town after the weekend, but they left behind enough drugs to keep our school high for a long time. The next week, I tried acid for the first time. It was an eye-opening experience for me. For a brief period of time, I saw into another dimension and got a glimpse there may be more to life than we can see, hear, or touch. I saw people transform right in front of me. Some turned into angelic-looking creatures, and I saw other people's teeth turn into fangs, their fingers turn to claws. While my brain was lit up on acid, I felt transparent, as though others could see into my soul. It was a terrifying and humbling experience to feel completely naked before God and man. After the drugs wore off, I was left wondering what the hell had happened and thought maybe I was crazy because all that my friends experienced was seeing bright colors and breathing walls. After graduating from high school, a friend and I moved to Colorado. This was my first time living away from home. We got jobs working at a ski resort. The resort rented us an apartment on the mountain for $180 a month. We worked 4 days a week and had 3 days a week to ski for free. The apartment building was employee housing. It was filled with other young kids and there was always a party going on somewhere in the building. I sold weed and I was using LSD and mushrooms on a regular basis. I was intrigued by the experiences I was having on psychedelics. For me, they were a portal into the spiritual dimension. I did not realize it at the time, but the Bible refers to the use of drugs for this purpose as witchcraft or pharmakia. Having no other spiritual reference points, I didn't see anything wrong with using drugs to access the spirit world. I thought I was only gaining awareness of the Creator, but I have since learned that these drugs can open the mind to many spiritual forces, some good and some dark. Living in the Rocky Mountains was a humbling experience. Winter storms would dump fresh snow on the mountain in a short period of time, and the weather could go from blizzard conditions to blue skies overnight. For the first time in my life, I was aware of spiritual and natural forces greater than myself. I didn't realize it at the time, but my parents had started going to a Christian church and were praying for me. Excuse me. Eventually, things fell apart for me in Colorado. I got arrested and lost my job. In losing the job, I also lost the apartment and had to figure out what to do next. When I considered my options of taking off for some adventure in a new town or going back home, I couldn't shake the loneliness I was feeling. I decided to go home. When I moved back home, I was not planning to quit partying. One day, my dad pulled me aside and told me I was welcome to stay if I was doing something productive with my life. He told me if I was going to keep partying, I needed to do it somewhere else. I took what he said to heart. I could see that he had a strength that was different. It felt like the God I had been wondering about was looking at me through his eyes. He could see right through me and was encouraging me to go another direction. Not out of fear or anger, but out of faith and love. I started reading the Bible from cover to cover. I wanted to know the Creator. I wanted to find a source of strength to help me deal with the corrupt world full of selfish people. I got baptized and gave my life to Christ. Over the next few years, the Lord took away my desire to drink and use drugs. He gave me hope and a future. One verse that had a big impact on me in those years was Joshua 1:9, where the Lord told Joshua, "Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." I learned to be less selfish and grew close to God. The Lord became a friend that was loyal and a source of strength that I could always count on. At 20 years old, I had the peace of a child and understood what Christ meant when he said, "We must be born again and take on the heart of a child." I went to junior college and spent my spare time surfing and riding a mountain bike. I did not date or get involved with any women for a few years. I met the woman that would become my wife shortly after I asked God to bring the right one into my life. We were married a year later. I ended up graduating from college and starting a career in the timber industry. By the time I was 30, we had 3 kids and owned a nice house in Northern California. The Lord blessed me with an education, a career, a family, and a home. Things I could never have done on my own effort. I wish I could tell you that we lived happily ever after, but that's not the end of the story. In Luke 8:14, Jesus talks about the seed that was sown among the thorns. He said, "The seed that fell among the thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature." My walk with the Lord started with good intentions. I had found the truth that was missing from my childhood, and I had faith that if I gave my life to Christ, he would make it peaceful, successful, and free of conflict. I didn't know how to handle the stress and the conflict of marriage, a career, and raising kids. My wife and I argued frequently about money. Our oldest son was defiant and strong-willed from birth. I struggled to find the balance with him between discipline and love. I worked in the woods with some of the most hard-headed people in the world. My life had constant conflict at work and home. Eventually, at the age of 35, I started drinking again. Just a beer on Saturday nights. After all, I was an adult now with a career and a family. I knew the Lord, and I should be able to drink like a gentleman. One beer on Saturday night turned into hard liquor on Friday and Saturday nights. My wife and I would drink together on vacations and had a lot of fun together. When I drank, I made sure not to drive or make a scene. I thought I had learned from the mistakes of my youth and could control myself. I would measure my shots of whiskey or vodka and slowly increase the number of shots as my tolerance increased. I knew exactly how many shots it took to get me feeling the way I wanted to feel, and I could stop drinking and fall asleep without causing any problems. With this level of control, it felt like nothing could go wrong. I coached my son's baseball and basketball teams when they were young. We had a lot of fun times as a family, but we also moved around for my career every few years. In our 29 years of marriage, my wife and I have lived in 14 different homes in 7 different towns. I was always looking for a greener pasture, thinking if I could just find the right job or the right community, then my problems would go away. By 2008, our kids were becoming teenagers, and my job was becoming more stressful. I started drinking heavily on the weekends and developing a temper. My wife started to threaten me with separation if I didn't get a handle on my temper and my mouth. This caused me a lot of fear, and I started to see her as a threat to my future rather than as my wife and partner. During this time, I became more isolated than ever and dove deeper into the bottle. In 2012, I took a job near my hometown, thinking that getting back near my family and the town I grew up in might do us all some good. Looking back, I think I was hoping to recapture some of the magic of my childhood and escape the pressures I was feeling. I didn't know much about the job when I accepted the position. It turned out to be an office job with 3 guys who didn't like me, and I didn't like them. I traveled with this job and started drinking during the work week. My anger and frustration were off the charts. I was lonely and wanted a healthy connection with people, but I didn't know how to connect except when I was partying or working. In 2014, I met a woman at work who also didn't fit into the office environment. We started taking walks together on our lunch breaks. She knew I was married, and I convinced myself there was nothing wrong with the friendship. Eventually, we became romantic outside of work. When my wife found out, it broke her heart. I quit seeing the woman and went to counseling with my wife, but eventually I resumed the relationship. When my wife found out the second time, she was angry and threatened to ruin my life. I told her I'd do whatever it takes, even if it meant leaving the job or moving out of the area. She told me I needed to leave the job and go back to work in the woods where I belonged. So in 2015, I took a job in Eugene. We agreed I'd go alone and get to know the area, find a place for our family to relocate. I found a one-room shack on 5 acres outside of town where I lived alone for a year and a half. The shack was about 15 feet by 25 feet with a fridge, a stove, a sink, and a bed. I had to walk across the property to use the bathroom in the big house. It was a lonely existence, but for the first time in 23 years, I was free from conflict in the home. I drank whenever I felt like it. I closed down a bar in town every Friday and Saturday night, and I took off my wedding ring and lived like a bachelor. Do you remember the gypsy carnival that came to town when I was 18? It turns out many of them were from Eugene. I didn't realize it when I moved to town, but I soon started making friends all over town. I started smoking weed and using magic mushrooms again. I would spend time with ladies without telling them I was married. I also went home to visit my wife and kids about one weekend a month. I was living a double life. Galatians 6:7 states, "Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Whoever sows to please their flesh from the flesh will reap destruction." In the spring of 2016, I met a woman at the bar who was unique and interesting. She had a powerful personality. She was connected in the drug world and could get anything. We ran into each other several times and developed a friendship, although she would joke about her suspicions that I might be an undercover cop. I joked along but never thought much of it. We ended up taking a trip up to Washington to see that old hippie band play a show. Around 4 in the afternoon, she gave me a piece of homemade chocolate that she said had mushrooms mixed into it. I started hallucinating and had an intense stomach ache almost immediately. I don't know what the ingredients were or how much she gave me, but I wasn't worried because I trusted her. I lay down in the grass, and when my stomach settled down, she brought out a sandwich bag full of some psychedelic recipe mixed with chocolate. She offered it to me, and I started eating it like candy. This was my last night of freedom before my wife and kids moved up to the new house we bought, and I wanted to make the most of it. Between 4 o'clock and 10 o'clock that night, I ate everything in the bag and swallowed it up. Excuse me. Between 4 and 10 that night, I ate everything in the bag and followed it up by swallowing a piece of paper soaked in LSD that she put in my mouth. By 11 that night, I realized I was in over my head. The full effects of everything I ate kicked in late in the night and made me feel like I was disintegrating. The hallucinations were more intense than anything I had experienced before. I spent the rest of the night wandering around the desert trying to walk it off. When the sun came up the next day, I returned to the car for the drive home, thinking this whole experience would soon be over. When I got back to the car, the lady who gave me the drugs told me that she was part of a satanic community and that I made a mistake going on the trip with her. When I asked her why she gave me such a heavy dose, she told me I needed to have the doors of my mind blown off their hinges and that I was going to be sorting things out for a while. A while? What did she mean by a while? I don't know why she wanted to hurt me. I wondered if it was because she thought I was a cop, or was it because I wasn't honest about my marriage. Whatever the reason, it didn't matter because I was going to spend the next year trying to survive the effects of the trip, which didn't go away. Over the next year, my brain didn't stop vibrating. I was dizzy and disoriented. I experienced hallucinations, and I was in a constant state of fight or flight. I could not sleep and experienced paranoia, not knowing who I could trust. My brain felt like a car engine that was revving at 5,000 RPMs even when it was idling. It felt like my nervous system had blown fuses and my body chemistry had a contaminated fuel system. Whatever recipe of drugs I ate had long-term effects that lasted throughout the next year. In the aftermath of this experience, I started to talk to God and my wife honestly. I realized that repentance and God's mercy was my only hope of regaining my sanity. I begged God in prayer to heal me, to forgive me, and to take away the lingering effects. Pastors anointed me with oil and prayed for me. It felt like my prayers were going into an empty void, unheard and unanswered. I was shattered, hopeless, and I didn't see how I could survive what I had done. My biggest fear was the damage I had done was permanent and irreversible, both to my mind and to my marriage. One night, when I was laying on my face, asking God for help, I perceived a response. The answer to my prayer was, "You have to go through this. You can't run away from it. You can't go around it. You can't escape this. You have to go through this, and I will go through it with you." In that instance, I understood that I was experiencing chemical, physical, and spiritual consequences of my actions. I had overdosed on psychoactive substances, and there was a consequence. But the fact that I had a connection to God gave me hope. I called anybody who would listen to me looking for help. When I couldn't sleep in the middle of the night, I called a crisis line. The person on the phone coached me how to look around my room and identify different shapes, circles, squares, as a way of getting out of my insanity. I talked to mental health counselors, church pastors, anybody who would listen. One of the churches in Eugene invited me to their CR program. I went to CR and started a step study. I was getting so much out of my first step study that I started a second one on a different night. I noticed that as I worked the steps and listened to other guys tell their stories, I forgot about my own problems for a while. It was a temporary break from my insanity. The overdose experience was the best thing and the worst thing that ever happened to me. It humbled me. It stripped away my denial and my pride. It brought me face to face with the cause of all my problems, myself. It got me to be honest with God, with myself, and with all the people in my life. I haven't taken a drink or used any drugs in 5 years now, and most of the symptoms I experienced from the overdose have improved or gone away. I take seriously Matthew 7:24, where Jesus said, "Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand." I don't want to be the foolish man. I come to CR at Rolling Hills every Wednesday. I have been through several step studies, and I'm helping lead one now. I have made amends to my wife, and we recently celebrated our 29th anniversary. We get along better today than we ever have, and my favorite part of every day is seeing her when I get home from work. I have learned to apologize and ask for forgiveness when I'm wrong. I am learning to forgive others when they hurt me. It hasn't been easy. I created a lot of wreckage and caused a lot of pain, but I am trusting that God will restore all the broken relationships in my life in His time. I'm grateful to CR for giving me the tools to have healthy relationships and connections with family and friends. I'm grateful to my sponsor and all the friends that I have made at CR. I return here every week, and I have hope because I've seen God restore many lives through this program. When people show up, humble themselves, and work the steps, their lives get better. If you're new to CR, I encourage you to give the program a chance. It worked for me when my pain outweighed my pride and I got honest. Reach out to somebody who has experience in recovery and listen to what they have to say. Get into a step study and work the steps. Read your Bible and pour your heart out to God in prayer. The Lord hears your prayers, and He has the power to heal. The Lord will walk through this with you. Finally, from Ephesians 3, verse 16, I pray that out of his glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power, together with all the Lord's holy people, to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. Thank you.